It's Ashley Ross, and I'm the director of the Louisiana Campaign for Tobacco-Free Living. I'm pleased to be here this morning. And as is abundantly clear, today I'm going to be presenting on Rebuilding as One, the new face of Louisiana tobacco prevention and control. I would also like to introduce my counterpart in this, and that's Matt Belliere here. So let's get started. Essentially, I always like to know what I'm getting ready to learn, so just to kind of set the stage, today is essentially a case study on the successful program integration for states with a similar infrastructure, such as Louisiana, which is more than one major tobacco control program. And essentially today, we're going to be running through these various bullets. I won't go through them. First of all, just to set the stage in terms of the rationale, the context behind this integration, as we've termed it, Louisiana is one of the 11 states in the U.S. that has more than one major tobacco control program. Historically, TFL and LTCP, or Louisiana Campaign for Tobacco-Free Living, TFL, or LTCP, Louisiana Tobacco Control Program, have historically we've functioned largely independent of one another. And just so you understand where we're coming at this from, TFL has been in existence, that's the institution with which I'm affiliated, since 2003. It is an excise tax-funded program, and we are located within the Louisiana Public Health Institute. Now, our counterpart, the LTCP, has been in existence since 1993. They are funded by both the CDC Office of Smoking and Health and a small portion from the MSA, and they are located within the Department of Health and Hospitals Bureau of Primary Care and Rural Health Chronic Disease Prevention Unit. Say that three times fast. I should also note that there's, in addition to that, due to the funding sources, that we do have various varying levels of funding. For example, in terms of this year, I think TFL, is our state appropriations, comes in somewhere around $7.3 million. And correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but I believe the state's about $2.0 million. So there is a small difference. Furthermore, how we found ourselves in this integration position, obviously Louisiana was struck with some pretty major natural disasters in 2005, and that did bring with it a number of challenges, both from a funding perspective, programmatic perspective, logistics perspective, even trying to struggle to be one of the top line news issues, you know. And essentially, we saw this as an opportunity, really, to come together and to make both of our programs and the tobacco control movement as a whole much stronger as a result of these challenges. And so we really also felt in terms of long-term sustainability of tobacco control in the state, it was imperative that we found a more systematic, synergistic way to work together. So the leadership of the TFL and TCP got together to integrate, and our goal was essentially, as it's written here, to maximize programmatic synergy, impact, efficacy, efficiency for the Louisiana tobacco prevention and control movement. And our objectives towards that end were to develop one virtual program out of the state's two major programs, including a strategic vision, an evaluation plan, a work plan, and the resource allocation. We do use this term virtual plan because it is not our intention now or in the future at this time to ever financially merge these two programs, but rather to try to really maximize the strengths that both of us have in our different situations, as well as minimize the weaknesses that we have with those the positions both within government and outside of government in terms of funding and administrative nimbleness, as we call it. So how did we go about this? Our integration methodology was essentially divided into six phases. The first of which was so critical was for us to agree upon the model by which we would go through this integration process. And for us, we did this with the fabulous help of the Tobacco Technical Assistance Consortium, and Deborah Morris was the particular contractor with whom we worked. But essentially, we developed a three-phase model, and it's outlined here. So this really started in earnest December of 06 to now where we are. So phase one started December of 06 through September of 07. And that was really to establish this organizational understanding, trust. Trust is huge. Really understanding each other's structures, making sure that we were using the same language, et cetera. And then to kind of roll out the pilot alignment based on that. Phase two, which is what we're in now, was the implementation, monitoring, the tweaking of that initial phase one, and to start the process for the next phase two. All of this I'll begin to go through as we go into the next slides. And then phase three, we were expecting to complete full integration by July 2009. So keep in mind, this whole process took us from December 2006 to a projected July 2009. It is not a fast overnight process, but that's a good thing. So how did we determine what sort of integration model we wanted to work with? I know it's very difficult to see here, but essentially what I want to be able to share with this is that we looked at five phases that would vary from full total integration to really more of a collaboration or coordination effort. And we, as the two leadership teams and our staff, decided that we felt really comfortable in the last two columns, the four and five. So essentially what we walked away with was a hybrid model. So it's a highly, as you can see here, it's to jointly develop a comprehensive series of strategies to address our goal areas, divide the strategies among the two institutions, and collaborate and pool resources on specific implementation strategies, but again, never fully collapsing the both programs into one single program, only a virtual program. And again, the second tier of information are what are the corresponding evaluation steps. So for those of you who are going through an integration process, I would highly recommend using a model such as this just to make sure everyone's expectations and understandings are the same. So after we'd established the three phases, we'd committed to the model that fit both of our institutions as a virtual program, we developed a very high-level picture of each of our institutions' current programs, and we used the CDC OSH framework. Actually, we used the revised OSH framework. So essentially, as you can see here, although it's very small, there are three columns. The middle column is the CDC best practices, and it lists those five programmatic components. And the outside columns, the one on the left being the LTCP or the state program, the one on the right being TFL's program, we tried to see what the current programs that we had, where did those fit with the CDC, and thus where did we fit with each other. And so as you can see, the TFL program really started with seven components, and the TCP program started with six components, and now we're functioning essentially under five components in this integrated vision. The third step was to gather input from stakeholders regarding the program priorities. So for this, we really took advantage of the fact that the state's tobacco control program is housed within the Bureau of Primary Care and Rural Health, within their chronic disease prevention unit, which has an annual meeting to come together, and it's an opportunity for all the stakeholders to kind of to speak to what they feel like the current program priorities are or should be, and it's really just an opportunity for us all to jointly hear where everyone is and to jointly brainstorm. So that was a really valuable process for us in coming to what would eventually be our initial program priorities and would eventually be phase two and phase three of this integration process. So from there, the work groups, which is essentially our staff, developed short-term goals and supporting plans for what was originally four program priority areas, but what was so successful and the buy-in was so huge from our staff, it eventually rolled out to six program priority areas. And we'll talk about those in a second. We also then assigned complementary accountabilities and timelines for the execution completion of the plans for these six program areas, and we're currently executing, monitoring, and modifying the plans accordingly. I can't stress enough the importance of this is a living system, and it's constantly being updated. You must communicate all the time and tweak accordingly. So we have these six areas, which were disparities and diversity, the 18 to 24 population, 11 to 17 population, cessation services, media and communication, and grassroots networking or community infrastructure. Those were our six. So for each of these six program priorities, we developed jointly these elements here, these 10 elements here. So we as a group, for these particular working groups, were to work out the goals, objectives, strategies, target audience, resources needed, et cetera, for these priorities. And at that point, we weren't really thinking so much as what each group brought to the table, but what we, as a total combined unit, would need. And then we figured out who could bring what from which programs. So for phase one for these program priorities, like I said, and these are organized by the OSH CDC, CDC OSH, excuse me, program priorities. So for the first statewide community interventions, like I said, it was disparities and diversity, which for us was the statewide disparities working group, for those of you who are familiar with the CDC OSH initiative that's underway right now. Communities of Color Network, which is essentially a statewide community capacity and mobilization system for, particularly at this stage, for the African-American population of Louisiana. We also focused on 11 to 17, youth advocacy and leadership. In terms of the 18 to 24, we worked together to develop a Dirty Habits College Initiative, which is underway right now, which paired really well with the VOTEC and the Straight to Work population. Here's a great example of how, for the 18 to 24 category, TFL is leading the Dirty Habits College Initiative, and TCP is leading the Vote to Atkins Straight to Work, and you can understand how there's a lot of great synergy there that we might not have been able to identify so readily or so effectively in our response to it if we hadn't gone through this process. Continuing on for the state and community interventions, like I'd mentioned, we had a grassroots community infrastructure building. Essentially, we have combined the efforts of all of our TFL's regional coordinators and the corresponding TCP community contractors to target 44 municipalities throughout the state of Louisiana to essentially do grassroots networking infrastructure building towards taking our state law to the next level and towards pushing for local ordinances that will support that. And that, again, would not have been something that we were able to do. For a specific example for that, all of our regional coordinators' job descriptions, our community grantee deliverables, really not necessarily match, but complement that of the state's community contractors. And they work really, really well together. So they have a very clear expectation of what each other is doing and how they need to support each other. And in some cases, we would strategically ask that a community contractor and a regional coordinator would work together on a local ordinance rather than work on their own, because we felt like that would be, one, a really great opportunity to build teamwork between those two positions, or that local ordinance effort would really require more than one person on the ground. Then the cessation interventions was the next program priority that we got together on in terms of our quit line and our fax referral program, as well as our health provider education, and then health communications and interventions. The health communications and interventions piece is a really great story. Although I said that we're not trying to merge financially our programs, this is a great example of how when we put our resources together, we can be much stronger. For example, right now the state is subcontracting with the Louisiana Public Health Institute, where TFL is housed, for their media efforts across secondhand smoke, youth, and cessation. And it increases our ability for media buys, for message consistency. It's essentially a far more cost-effective approach that we've been doing in the past. It also makes our lives a lot easier when we're not doing two of the same thing at the same time. So what were the results? I've kind of peppered what I've said so far in terms of the fabulous successes thus far, but just to recap that, we now have a very clear three-phase framework that's grounded in CDC best practices. And we have these complementary strategies and pooled resources, like I mentioned, in terms of the 44 local ordinance pushes throughout the state, or the subcontracted media efforts for TCP through TFL. This strategic alignment really enables us a unified response to emerging issues and opportunities, and it really, really adds to our effectiveness and our efficiency. And we've gotten increased staff buy-in regarding our collaborative efforts. Like I said, we originally started out with four program priorities, but we feel like the team and the staff really saw so clearly the importance and the value, and even just the day-to-day ease, although it does have some challenges, that this integration process brought to us, that they came to the table and said, you know, we should really be doing these other two areas at the same time. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, those were cessation and communication. So those were kind of the add-ons. In terms of our next steps, one is sustaining the phase one integration. Like I said, it requires constant care, it requires constant communication, it requires constantly thinking about who else needs to be involved in this decision, who else needs to have this information. And as you all know, in tobacco control, I mean, that's hard to do in your own head with your own team, but it's even a little bit more challenging when you're trying to do it across institutions. But the payoff is so huge, I can't speak to that highly enough. We're also monitoring and evaluating our successes and our challenges, and then making some of those modifications accordingly. I think one of the things that we thought we might have wanted to move a little bit faster into phase two of all this process, but I think we've also realized that we need to stop, take a step back, and let the group get a little bit more adjusted to where we are now before we really ramp up into the next phase two. But we do have a very clear sense of where we're going for phase two, in terms of we're going to be synthesizing more systematically our 2008-2009 work plans, the scopes and the corresponding scopes of work, if those are contracts. Our evaluation plan will be complementary, and we'll really establish a very clear 3-year strategic vision. And the last bullet here, the leveraging tobacco integration process towards larger integration opportunities. That was one of the things that we were really thinking of when we put this presentation together, that one thing is for us to integrate with other tobacco control programs in our states. For example, in Louisiana, we have a third major tobacco control movement that's emerging from the center of the state. So this has been a very valuable process for us to get them on the same page and really to maximize the synergy and really leverage the resources. But the second piece is that the tobacco control program in the state is housed within chronic disease prevention. And us at LPHI, we're housed within our health promotion disease prevention entity. And so it really helps us have a very strong sense of how we can then take this to the next step and better integrate ourselves into chronic disease prevention, which, as we all know, is really the next stage of where we're going as a tobacco control movement or health promotion disease prevention as we go along. Not to read all these, but success factors and lessons learned, really, I can't say enough. You've got to have a very complete understanding of where you are programmatically and a complete understanding of where the body with whom you're trying to integrate is programmatically. And that requires a lot of energy, consistency, constancy. And you have to have a top-down buy-in and a bottom-up buy-in at the same time. So you need to have your leadership at the very, very top. Like for us was the Secretary of Health or the CEO of our program. And then from the ground up, so our partners, our volunteers, had to really understand what we were trying to do and had to understand what the value of this was in their everyday work with us. So you can't go with just one or the other. You've got to do both at the same time. For us, like I mentioned, the outside facilitator was very helpful. We did have a challenging situation in Louisiana. I think we're really surprised at how quickly we were able to work through a lot of these issues, but it was extremely, extremely helpful to have someone that constantly had their eyes on the far-off future and could kind of get outside of some of the day-to-day maybe baggage and challenges that we were having. And respect for and commitment to the process. Again, this is time-consuming. It can be very challenging. This takes a lot of energy. However, once you establish a rhythm, once you get into the buy-in of the concept, it brings so much more to the work that we do. And so there are times when you do want to walk away, and there are times when you just have to stay and work through it. And I think that everyone in our group would say that that has been well, well worth it. And I think that we've created an amazing team as a result of all this. And I think that we've got great things ahead of us in the immediate long-term future. And I feel like we have a great team to do it with. So my infinite, infinite gratitude and Matt's infinite gratitude to all the fabulous players of the Louisiana program. It's our staff, it's our contractors, it's our grantees, it's our partners. Deborah from TTAC and from Kathleen Kalum, who's our CDC project officer, have just been fabulous in the process, and I couldn't do this without mentioning them. So with that, I thank you for your time. It really doesn't. I mean, that is what it is. I mean, I think that that's what we all strive to do. And I think it's easier when you have maybe one major tobacco control program because responsibilities, expectations, and are more clear. I don't know if that totally answers your question. And you are one of the 11 states. Right. Oklahoma has gone through a large evolution, as I understand, too, and you are one of the 11 states. And actually, Oklahoma is known, I mean, it's looked up to as one of the model states in terms of how a state and a private, they call them foundations, can integrate like that. And they've done it very, very well, including all the partners at the table. Actually, we haven't only included two of our organizations. I guess that's what we had really highlighted here because, again, historically, that had not been the case in Louisiana. We've had a lot of major leadership transition. For example, at TFL, after the storm, the entire leadership structure was devastated. We lost all seven of our major lead partners. And so you're essentially starting from scratch. And historically, the programs hadn't worked together, not to the extent that they needed to. So this was, for us, a major breakthrough. And I believe that there are other states that have some similar challenges, whether that be in the tobacco control or other areas. And I think that we just really wanted to highlight a systematic process by which you can go through this, even if the challenges are pretty significant, which they were for us. I think you're absolutely right. This is what we're working for, is a statewide comprehensive plan, and there are far more partners here than we were able to represent. Yes. Oh, ours is 7-3 this year for excise. Master settlement agreement, sadly for the state of Louisiana, comes out to be about $500,000 a year, and the state is in the process, likely, of selling off the remainder of it for coastal restoration. So it's very difficult for tobacco control in Louisiana to come out against coastal restoration at this juncture, as you can imagine. Thank you. That's the next level of what we're doing. We in Louisiana function on every other year fiscal session, so we won't be up for a fiscal session in 2009. So at this point, particularly after we've been able to successfully get through this process, all of the tobacco control partners in Louisiana are mobilizing for an excise tax increase, which would be really our major focus is to look at it as an intervention for tobacco, but obviously as a mechanism to ensure sustainability for the chronic disease prevention of which tobacco control is a portion. But absolutely, it's critical. Absolutely. That's a fabulous question. Certainly, well, the disparities piece, and actually our disparities lead is in the room right now, but we were working with the Office of Smoking and Health for that disparities process, and through that have convened a coalition of diverse, disparate populations to help us address that better. Where we are now at this juncture is that we feel like we have an ever-decreasing amount of funding, and we really are trying to reach the most that we can, and we felt for us, given the stats in Louisiana, that the 11 to 17 and the 18 to 24 was our best target in terms of African-American population. The state of Louisiana, I think, has roughly three times the national average for African-Americans, and so that really, to us, currently is our priority population, but certainly, absolutely, we're looking at other populations. For us, it's disparate, not diverse. So for us, that's going to be rural, that's going to be low SES. We are looking at the Native American population, LGBT, and was there anything else, Mark, that I'm overlooking at this point? API. So does that answer your question? It's a very important one. So thank you all.